The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
As you've been hearing, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will meet with the US President Donald Trump today to discuss the US administration's latest 21-point peace plan, which was presented to Arab leaders on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly last week. Paul Rodgers, Emeritus Professor of Peace Studies at Bradford University, joins me now. Paul, good morning.
Good morning.
At the bones of this, how much do we know about this 21-point peace plan? Because reporting last week suggested that Hamas had accepted it, and now they're saying they haven't seen the detail of it.
That is curious, certainly. We have a little bit more information. Trump basically did an interview with Axios, one of the American agencies, which basically sketched things out rather more fully. There's a lot of uncertainty going on. I think we have to face this, particularly in terms of just how engaged Hamas itself is. And what do we mean by Hamas? Are this the people who've survived in Qatar, or are they actually within Gaza itself? So that's questionable for a start. But essentially, what Trump is proposing is obviously a ceasefire and return of all the hostages at very short notice, and then the prospects of some sort of changeover and a rebuilding of Gaza over many years it would have to be. The UN had put a proposal forward known as the sort of New York Declaration a couple of weeks ago, and that basically put a pretty strong role on the organized UN groups that have been operating in Gaza for a long time, especially the UN Relief and Works Agency. And essentially it saw that as, to a large extent, the agency of a rebuilding. Where the money would come from is another matter, but the assumption is that some Gulf states would contribute. But essentially, the UN proposal is completely unacceptable as far as Israel is concerned, because it is deeply antagonistic to essentially to UNRWA, the Relief and Works Agency, that it regards as being far too, quote, independent of Israeli interests. The other thing which I think is significant is that, as far as we know, the United States is opposed to very heavy UN involvement and wants to see some sort of, it's difficult to say, an independent strategic authority overseeing the rebuilding and redevelopment of Gaza over a five-year period, and only then will be there some sort of handover to a Palestine Authority. And that agency, that strategic agency, could well involve this Tony Blair Institute, and that's been much muted recently. So it's all a bit messy, but the real issue is whether Netanyahu has any intention at all of abiding by any new agreement, or will he just play for time?
So that's no matter what is on the table, he may appear to go along with Trump, but at the end of the day, as he has done with many of the ceasefire proposals, he just walks away from them at the last moment. Or accuses Hamas of not agreeing to them, and therefore Israel walks away. The idea of a Tony Blair Institute being involved in all of this, I mean, he doesn't have an army. So how would this whole thing be policed? Are they suggesting under the US peace plan that Israel would in fact be the policing authority?
Apparently not. There appears to be an indication that whether it was the plan adopted more from the US situation or whether it is more related to the UN, there would be some sort of intervention force available, which would be drawn primarily from surrounding states. In other words, it would be largely an Arab force operating out of Egypt. But this is very unclear. There are other indications that there might be an involvement from overseas countries from outside the Middle East. But certainly there would be some kind of stabilization force, or at least an observer force within Gaza, maybe operating from a base just across the border in Egypt. But this is very uncertain. It's not at all clear that Israel would wear this in any case.
Is there any appetite in those Arab states surrounding Israel and Gaza, any appetite to supply boots on the ground?
Probably pretty limited. Maybe one or two of the Gulf states would do it, ones who have been involved in major conflicts recently. But of course, that would rule out the United Arab Emirates and the Saudis, who've been so heavily involved in the fighting in Yemen. The Egyptians probably would be very dubious about it. The Egyptians are dubious about anything which involves, in any sense, the survival of people involved with Hamas, because it basically sees Hamas as a branch of the Muslim Brotherhood, going right back many years, and that is completely unacceptable to Israel, to Egypt. On the other hand, the Egyptians do have a vested interest in getting some sort of a peaceful move in Gaza, and they would go along, I think, with quite a number of different plans. And the real question is, what would Netanyahu wear? And is Trump really keen on sort of a long-term move, or is this sort of short-term grandstanding?
I mean, looking at what happened at the UN last week, it looks as if Trump wants to dismantle the UN. I mean, he doesn't really see an international role for America, and if America's not in, well, then the UN basically is limited in its finance and limited in its effectiveness.
I think, in a sense, what Trump is about is the sort of the decay of the rules-based international order, as it's called, and he's much more of the kind of thinking that, you know, it's every state for itself. And, of course, that works if you're one of the most powerful states. Many people would argue that all the time this is happening, China is making more and more contacts with more and more governments and sort of seems to be seeking to replace the United States almost by stealth in terms of the most significant country in the world. But Trump doesn't see it that way. He sees it as basically the United States is clearly the lead country. And, you know, who are we to be bothered about these minnow states? Now, that's a rather strong way of putting it, but I think that's really Trump in essence.
Now, you may have seen some of the discussions around moving the UN out of New York, where it is headquartered, maybe to somewhere like Geneva. I suppose this was brought about by the refusal of America to grant Mahmoud Abbas, the president of the Palestinian Authority, a visa to visit the United States to address the United Nations. He had to do so by video. I mean, that kind of high-handedness from a country that did welcome people like Nikita Khrushchev at the height of the Cold War and Fidel Castro to address that body, and suddenly they decide, presumably at the bidding of Israel, not to allow Abbas in.
Well, it's a very strong indication of the way the United States is going under Trump, and I think we can expect more of this. Whether essentially the United Nations organization as a whole would take the decision to move completely, well, the real issue is where would it move to? As you say, the key one is obviously Geneva, which has the Palais de Nation and all the rest, and a very long history of having many UN bodies involved there. And successfully in many ways. It's a city which is very well used to having a large international presence, although, of course, to have the General Assembly would be really quite a dominating thing and sort of lead to a lot of local problems. But it's possible. That would really mean a major breach with the United States. And that, I think, is going to depend partly on U.S. domestic politics. I mean, would the loss of the United Nations headquarters from New York be seen by enough Americans as an indicator of a failure of the United States to maintain its status as, quote, the world's great state, a great country? So I think is questionable at the moment. Sorry.
I'm wondering how blind Americans are to what's going on. I mean, when they have their president going to the United Nations and berating European countries for their immigration policies, for suggesting that he would have built or refurbed the UN with marble instead of plastic and all this sort of thing, that they were gypped when Trump Inc. could have given them a bargain. I mean, this kind of nonsense, can Americans not see what is happening to their leadership?
I think many can, and increasingly so, and Trump's personal standing within the United States has been falling pretty strongly. But on the other hand, you have a divided and ineffectual opposition. I mean, the Democratic Party is in a heck of a bad state in the United States. You have a wide range of views within it, from pretty radical people who really believe strongly in the UN and the United States remaining a global role. But there are so many factions within the Democratic Party, and no person clearly there who can lead in terms of a very rounded way. And I think this is one of the reasons why lacking this kind of opposition to Trump is really giving him a free rein. Yeah. And of course, meanwhile, Trump's policy is really to undermine so much of the normal American rule of law in terms of putting himself forward that's just a further complication. Yeah.
I was away for a week last week, and when I came back, I just went over whatever I hadn't been able to follow while I was away in Trumpland. And this is the kind of list the Supreme Court used to try and deny people birthright citizenship: firing the Federal Trade Commission boss, Rebecca Kelly Slaughter, freezing $4 billion in foreign aid that had been approved by Congress, sending the military into Portland, Oregon, the indictment of James Comey, saying there would be others, George Soros and Adam Schiff, to be numbered among them, going after Fannie Willis in Georgia and Letitia James in New York for prosecuting him, firing FBI agents who bent the knee during George Floyd protests, shooting more Venezuela boats by drone without any knowledge as to who was on board and what, Tylenol and autism, tough it out, women. The cost of HB1 visas going through the roof, new sanctions on Iran, won't allow the annexation of the West Bank, he says, and he's going to crash the Hexit military gathering at Quantico. And then looking at the polls, Quinnipiac, 79% said the US is in political crisis and 60% of Republicans agree. Gallup says only 29% of Americans believe they're on the right track. A Verisite poll, 28% on the right track, 60% on the wrong track. So an extraordinary, in just 7 days, all of that unfolds. And to us, it's apparent this is a drive for autocracy and perhaps dictatorship, but many Americans are blind to it.
They are. I mean, it's very interesting the way you put at the end the polling. I mean, that polling has been pretty severe. This is in the matter of a few months. It's clear that when people are asked straight in polling circumstances what they think, then many more people are actually very worried about it. But there's still a sizable minority who more or less accepts the way that Trump is going, who bought into this make America great by any means necessary. And if that involves sort of a degree of autocracy, they will buy into that. And yes, I mean, to that extent, it is a state in crisis. And the way you've just put it, I think, draws attention to it in a way that most people don't appreciate. Because what is happening is so many of these moves are creeping and people do not put them together. And this is why, I mean, you're going away and doing it that, says it precisely. And that would be true for virtually any week. Some are worse than others, but basically it's happening right across the board. And enough people are prepared to go with it because they may personally benefit from it, that for the moment, with this poor opposition, we're not getting the sort of kickback against it that you would expect of a country such as the United States.
Paul Rogers, Emeritus Professor of Peace Studies at Bradford University, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.